What up, meepsters? This is Ryan Rainbro, and if you're hearing this, that means you're about to listen to one of the 99 free episodes of the Meep Meep Podcast, available wherever you cast pods. But keep in mind that there are new and unreleased episodes of the show on patreon.com/meepmeeppod. So you'll want to sign up there to hear future episodes and also other side projects like Choo Choo, the show about soundtracks, and contribute suggestions for future episodes as well. Will I listen to your suggestion? There's only one way to find out. patreon.com/meepmeeppod. Bye! Welcome to Meep Meep, the Roadrunner podcast, where we go through the albums of Roadrunner Records with the artists who made them and the musicians they influenced. Let's roll! What up, meepsters? I'm Ryan Rainbro, and it's Living with a Pod Complex, a series exploring albums released on Trustkill Records that were distributed through Roadrunner Records. And today, we're talking about the 2006 magnum opus from Bleeding Through entitled The Truth. The Truth, of course, followed up their 2003 smash hit, This Is Love, This Is Murderous, which is a classic for everyone between Punisher logo, tattoo, water bottles at the gym, and people that used to wear those cool pantyhose things on their arms. Remember that? We tried to pretend it didn't happen, but it did, okay? And not just the Hardy Boys, it was you too. You too. Hey, I wonder if Bono ever did it. He probably did. Hard to see with those sunglasses on, but what's important is who also was wearing sunglasses was my guest today, Brandon Schiappetti. Wonder which one is misspelled more often, Brandan or Schiappetti. That's why I just call him Buffy Barcode, the Sound Scan Slayer. And what did he do when he found out he was going to get to talk about the biggest album of his entire career with the number one music podcast named after a misheard noise by a fictional bird? Do you think he rented out a conference room and we sat across from each other at a table to discuss this? No, of course not. We did what any rational two people would do. We went to a pool party at his friend's house where Rihanna's We Found Love was playing in what appeared to be a loop of some kind in the background the entire time, and put a little umbrellas in our drinks, and it was a great time. Me and the former guitar player for 18 Visions just chatting it up about the most pivotal years that he'll ever experience. And that's how you're supposed to do it. May that be a lesson to you, pro podcasters out there and musicians scheduling your interviews. Quit being all stuffy and making it sound good and, you know, setting time aside for it. Do it in the middle of a pool party. That's how it's supposed to be done. So anyway, me and Brandan sat around and talked about this. Sat around. We're just loafing around poolside, getting our tan perfect. Shirtless, mind you. Both of us shirtless. He was getting a little envious of the traps and the delts, but he's got me on the pecs. So, you know, it all comes out in the wash if you do laundry. And there's plenty of dirty laundry in this episode where we talk about Bleeding Through's 2006 album, The Truth, Trustkill Records. And Bleeding Through have a lot of connections to the Meep universe as well. First of all, this album was produced by Rob Caggiano, former Roadrunner Records recording artist in the band Boiler Room. Remember them? No, you don't. They put out one song on a compilation. We're going to do it again. We're going to do it again now. Fine. Medium. Then he went on to produce many albums for Roadrunner Records, including 36 Crazy Fists, Cradle of Filth, which is probably why Bleeding Through got him, because they both have those cool keyboards. And, you know, Agony Scene. The list goes on. His credentials are numerous. Okay, he currently plays in Volbeat. At one point, he played in Anthrax. Now John Denius plays in Anthrax, who was in Shadows Fall, who also put out an album on Roadrunner, so maybe that's a connection if you're, you know, an insane person like me. Marta, the keyboard player for Bleeding Through, married to Phil Demel. Okay, he used to be a Machine Head. Now he's playing touring guitars for Lamb of God. Both meepsters. Okay. Ryan Wambacher plays bass, does cool flips. He's in a band called Light the Torch, that used to be called Devil You Know, Which One's a Worse Name, Hard to Say, and the vocalist for that band, Howard Jones, Killswitch Engage, which comes up later. When does it end? It doesn't end. But this episode does. And actually starts. And it starts now. You know, the truth is so unique in the catalog, mainly because of you. Your voice, your vocals are like an octave higher than any other album.
Well, not higher than this new one, man. My shit's fucking hot. I don't know what it is about the last like few years. I kind of just learned how to finally sing. It's kind of cool. But I tested my range on the truth, and that was really something that, like, you know, if I take anything from that record, it was, you know, with Rob producing the record, he definitely makes you work. You know what I mean? So, you know, it was definitely a learning experience. It taught me a lot about the studio. It's funny because Rob Caggiano is very, very notorious for doing so many takes that it's like just so many takes on stuff. And whereas like now it's like I literally do my vocals in 3 takes and that's it. With that record, I was doing one song and it took another one. And it was funny because I talked to Scott Ian when he did an Anthrax record. Scott Ian's like, bro, he made me do so many fucking guitar takes that I sprained my wrists.
Well, I mean, you know, so yeah, Rob Caggiano, he produces it. Ulrich Wilde did This Is Love, This Is Murderous. So it's interesting to go from Ulrich Wilde to Rob Caggiano. Although what's interesting to me about both of those things is, yes, Rob later goes on to be, well, I guess up until then he was in Anthrax, but both of those are like kind of like nu metal producers. Like they're like very clean, polished guys.
Yeah. I think the reason why we chose Ulrich was he was the only one that wanted to do the record.
Oh.
Nobody wanted to touch us then. And we really liked the idea of working with the producer, and he hit us up and was like, I really dig your band. I saw you guys play in Hollywood and I think I could do some good stuff. And he, you know, sent me the stuff he worked on, and really the engineering Pantera and being around that was really what sold it for me, and Deftones and stuff, not necessarily Static X stuff, but I liked his stuff. And what I liked about him is I feel like he was creative and he really helped bring like some creativity out of us and make us feel okay with being us. And I really liked working with him. I feel like if we had a bigger budget, a little bit more of a budget, he would have worked wonders for us. But he really taught us about opening up individually. And Rob was different. Rob was like, it was like Chinese water torture, man. Like it was just, what we learned there was about the grind of a record, about spending time on things and really nailing it. But, and I'm not talking crap about Rob at all. Like I love Rob. He's great. But that record is probably my least favorite record we have. He grinded me so far that I listened to my voice. My voice sounds strained and tired. And I think that with the truth, I mean, the truth was so personally, like, I don't like my vocals on that record. I think the record sounds very loose and very like kind of almost like punk rockish a little bit. I just feel like those songs live are so much fucking better. Like there's so much more us. Whereas the record, you know, because we started the record, we lagged. We didn't get much finished in our time frame, and then we had to go on tour for 2 months. And after that, Rob got sick on tour with Anthrax and had a stomach parasite and almost died. So we had to take all this time off from that. And then we reconvened like 8 months later. And it was like, we recorded in like 5 different locations. Like it was just kind of a mess and kind of a miracle even like happened. We almost had to go to another producer, and I wanted to finish with Rob, and then it got time to towards the end of it when we were trying to mix and really finish it up. And he left for England to go work on Cradle of Filth and kind of just like left us. Like all that time recording and stuff, he only spent like a few days mixing because he had to go record a Cradle Filth record. And I'm like sitting in New York with him alone. And I'm like, dude, like finish our record, man. Like, you know what I mean? So I feel like it was rushed. And honestly, I feel like if you ask him and honest God's honest truth, he'll tell you, he would probably tell you it's rushed. I'm sure he would like another crack at that record, to be honest, because the songs are great. And he helped us a lot with like structuring the songs, but I learned a lot from him. We learned so much from him, but that record is my least favorite record.
Is it your least favorite record to make or your least favorite record like the songs?
To make and the sound of the record. I don't think that because we put that record out and it's like, then you saw us live and you're like, wow, they're so much heavier and fantastical live, you know, like everything's stronger live. And I think that we got overproduced on that record where it almost took sort of like a lot of the honesty and grit and passion out of it, where it was like, we just wanted to, it was all about right, like getting the perfect take versus just finding the right emotional output. Whereas after that, when we worked with Devin on Declaration, I think that that record is the true bleeding through sound. And you listen to that record and you're like, holy, you could tell what we're feeling at that time. Like there's so much raw emotion that I feel like could have been in the truth, but it was a weird time of music too, wasn't it? Like bands were trying to get like different kinds of recordings. Bands were trying to like stand out from each other. And, you know, it was the Ozfest era and all of our bands, like, you know, bands were getting signed to major labels and shit. It was a very weird time, you know? I mean, the record's great. I love the songs. I mean, I'm going to re-record a lot of them. Selfishly, it's like, I want to re-record them because of this. I want to hear those songs recorded with us now as a band where like we know ourselves more and like we know what we do well and don't do well. And I want to hear it with like our new post-production and sort of my vision towards like what the vibe should be. And I think the fans kind of deserve it to hear it like that too. Cause I hear a lot from fans. Like they tell me all the time, like it's my favorite record. Those songs get the best responses, but it's not everybody's favorite recording.
Yeah. The mix is the weirdest part of the whole album, but I guess it's kind of answered why that happened. Yeah, but it's like,
it sounds loose and punk rock. And I just don't think it got the right attention. And a big reason why we work with Rob is because of the Cradle of Filth thing, because of his experience with working with keyboards and, you know, and it just, I feel like he just didn't, it was a weird thing. You know, he was going through a transitional period. It took us so long to do it. We had so much pressure on us at the time. We were expected to be like the next Killswitch Engage, really, you know? And we knew we weren't going to do that. We knew that we liked playing music that was more black metal and more not for the masses, you know? And we were okay with that. We've always been okay with that. We could have totally pulled fucking Killswitch Engage records off and been that band, but that's not us.
But do you feel like the truth is you kind of going for it between how you sing and also the song structures on that album?
Not necessarily. I think, you know, a lot of the songs were, you know, the structure stayed a lot the same of how we wrote it. I think we just learned how to write better structured songs from This Love Is Murderous. You listen to that record and you're like, dude, this song has 30 riffs in it. You know, and, you know, back in those days, we're like, okay, let's completely change the tempo and just go from a fast part to like this mosh part, right? And it's like one of those things where now, it's like, the new songs that I wrote that I have coming out as well in the future that are recorded, that are written already, dude, I take like two riffs and make a whole song out of them. Even like Rage is like three riffs. Whereas like This Is Love was like 12 riffs, you know, and it just flows. We learned a lot about flow on that record, on the truth. But I just feel like that record, it's so heavy live. Those parts are so heavy live. And I just don't think it was the right match. And all the things that got thrown into the middle of it, it was a grind. And we kind of got to the point where we're like, fuck, man, we just need this fucking record out. Like, we need this record out, you know? So.
We'll be back after a quick break.
If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at RootsMusicRambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
When you were making it, did you I'm not saying necessarily that you cared, because obviously you didn't care, you wouldn't have put it out, but did you realize at the time, like, oh, this is going to be kind of jarring for some of our older fans, the way that I'm singing, or a song like Lion in the Sand, where it's like super slow and ballady?
Yeah. You know, we were, but, you know, everything that we've done, you could look at our catalog, and whereas like a lot of bands in our area, and genre completely changed their sound and tried to like go for radio rock. And Mind in the Sand wasn't a radio rock song. Like, what radio would?
Well, I guess you thought a radio station would play it because you made a video for it and sent it to radio.
That's not even a rock song. Like, it's too slow to even be played on. That song was literally, Scott started playing this riff. I started singing this part. Derek started playing a beat. And I'm like, this just feels really right now. You know what I mean? With that record, a lot of people thought there was like preconceived sort of like things with us where we wanted to like write more commercial, but really we just were becoming better as songwriters and mature with like structures. I knew that people were going to kind of look at it as like, oh, Brandon sings more. But I'm like, dude, if you heard our demo, I sing on the demo. Always sang in parts. You know, it's always been part of the band. It's always been something that I enjoyed doing. And so I wanted to just do it more. It's like, you know, people are like, oh, you're trying to like, you know, be this band. I'm like, we're not trying to be any band. We've always just been bleeding through. Like, we don't care. Like, we didn't try to follow Avenged Sevenfold down the superstar and rabbit hole. We didn't try to like become a rock band like 18 Visions. Like, we fucking stuck to what we do. And that's why, like, I feel like 2 years later, whether we're full-time, not anything or whatever, like, we have this fan base that just like sticks with us, right? And that's all worth it. You know, we have a connection with our crowd, and I think it's because we've kept it kind of true to like what we do. And that record, you know, Scrutinized and stuff, but like, dude, like, it's a heck. That's why I want to record it. Like, I want people to hear what it sounds like now, and you'd be like, oh my god, okay, I get it now. I mean, when I got sent the mix, I was listening to our management and Trusco Records, and both of them said, we think you should get it remixed. We'll push it back and you should get it remixed. And I said, no, we're putting this fucker out. Looking back, I don't really have any regrets, but I kind of feel like we should have got it remixed.
Well, you definitely sing all the time, but never like The Truth. I mean, let's not, come on, you're way higher on that album.
I mean, a lot of that's Wambacher to Ryan as well. He backs me up on that record a lot. And also, but I mean, the new stuff I sing on like every song almost. I just like doing it.
But no, I agree that you always sing for sure. Like, even on This Is Love, a big, you know, all the big songs from that, they're singing, but they're more like, on This Is Love, This Is Murderous, and then The Truth is like,
dude, I feel you. On The Truth, it was definitely like a coming out for like singing choruses. You know what I mean?
Let's talk about some of the cool stuff, because there is one of my favorite Bleeding Through songs of all time on this album, and that is Confession. Because you have that sick, like, machine-heady riff on there with the keyboard part underneath.
Yeah. And that's the thing, too. Like that song. That song with a modern Bleeding Through recording will sound insane. You know what I mean? Like, that's what we want people to hear. And there is something to be said about the rawness of kind of the rawness and looseness of the record, you know, at the time. But, you know, Confession's so good. Painkiller, fuck. The song She's Gone, like, damn, dude, that song's fucking badass. She's Gone was the first song we ever played live off that record, right? As a teaser. And that was the last time we played it. We never played it again. I don't know why. It just didn't work into our life set at all.
She's Gone is interesting, because I was going to ask you about that in the sense that it, you know, it's kind of focused around that synth line. Are there any songs on here that started off as synth parts that you built around that?
For The Truth?
Yeah.
No, we kind of threw synth as like a secondary thing. We started kind of like basing things off of like stuff that Marta was writing around like Declaration for the next record. Yeah. She sings now. Her fucking keyboards are, dude, she's fucking there, man. She's in the pocket, like, for real.
Yeah. That's what I love about Rage, is her vocals on there. It makes it so much more depth.
It's just me, Ryan, and Marta singing at the same time. It's supposed to be like that.
Around this time, you started that band, The Innocent, with Dave, who, of course, ended up being in Bleeding Through. Yeah. And I know you played guitar in other bands as well. So are any of the songs that you're actually kind of writing the main riff for, anything that you wanted to be part of Bleeding Through that you decided wouldn't work, and that's why you did that other band?
No, The Innocent was mainly, like, I was sitting around with Dave, and he had these ideas, and he's like, I'm gonna get Brooks Wackerman and play drums. I'm like, fuck, sign me up, right? Like, play someone like Brooks, okay, let's do it. And you know, we put up these, we recorded these three songs. Nothing really happened because he joined Bleeding Through very shortly after. But you know, no, everything that we wrote for Bleeding Through is Bleeding Through. Like, even the Iron Sun stuff that I did or Supperwell, that was all separate.
Around this time, you do go on some big tours, though. You know, this album affords you. You get to do the Manson tour. You do,
oh yeah,
the Him tour. As a guy that wore a lot of eyeliner, that must have been really exciting for you.
Totally gothic fucking heaven right there.
And then you do Ozzfest again. But you had done Ozzfest in 04, so what was the difference between doing Ozzfest in 06 and 04? Did you feel more like the veterans of the second time around than the new guys?
04 was interesting because it was like, what a remarkable time. Like, all of our bands in our genre were now on this big festival, right? And it was such a coming out for, like, our type of music. And we all felt it every day. And we're like, dude, like, this is great. Like, wow. Like, it was just so remarkable. And that's what that felt like. And every day was, like, the biggest surprise. Like, we were off This Is Love, This Is Murderous. We were actually selling. There was a couple of weeks where we sold the same amount as the week as Slipknot did. So the record was doing really well off that the first time. Our signings were crazy. And that's when I kind of like realized, okay, like, you know, like, we have a connection with people, right? And it was very cool and new and fresh and exciting. It was like every day, like something was like, oh my God, like this really happened. Like, holy shit. 06 was, you know, the truth was out. There was expectation and we were a headliner, but it still was great. We were received so well. But that's when I kind of noticed that bands were more in competition than very supportive of each other. You know what I mean? It kind of worked that way where bands were like friendly competition type thing, but not always friendly, but it was just like bands wouldn't even watch each other anymore. You know what I mean? There was like a jealousy of what band did well. And I remember bands started watching Throwdown for the first week and they started realizing Throwdown was killing it. And so they wouldn't watch them anymore. Why are you like jealous because of it? It's, you know what I mean? It was one of those things. And that kind of was, you know, to be expected. I mean, anything that's like popping off like that, people have put their life into it. They want, there's a competitive thing. So the difference really was people knew us in 06 a lot. So the shows were crazier. The signings were crazier. Stuff was crazier. That was when I realized, like, okay, we're like this. I felt like around there, like, this is kind of as big as I'm good here. We're good here. You know what I mean?
Do you feel like in popularity, that was the peak? I mean, not creatively, as far as being popular, that you guys were at your maximum?
It's all kind of relative to the time. We still, I mean, cause like, we still play shows here. Like, we still play shows. And what we drew in, like, let's say like the 2010, like the 2010-2011 era. Which is, you know, we still pack out small rooms and we still draw a good crowd, but that era of the truth around in between the Ozzfests, shit was so big then. Like, the shows, like, everybody went to shows. Like, those shows were so big. So, I mean, I guess it was the biggest numbers we ever did headlining. Yeah, I guess that was like our pinnacle, like 2005 to 2009, 2008. And then it kind of like, the scene got, you know, really oversaturated and then we wrote Declaration and we had label problems and that record was never properly pushed and it fucking should have been, because what a fucking record. Like, I still listen to that record. I'm like, dude, we're going to record a lot of old stuff. Nothing off that record.
It's borderline irresponsible how good Declaration is.
You know, what's the funny part about Declaration and the truth kind of did this to us is, everybody expected after the truth, the next record to be that like radio rock. It was around the time, like, you know, 18 Visions was like major label band. They were going for it. They were totally like trying to be like Hinder and shit. And I remember everyone kind of, you know, Thrice was putting out weirdo fucking rock. Throwdown was kind of going a little bit like too much of the Pantera ripoff way. And I'm just like listening to these bands and I'm like, well, we never really wanted this. Like, if we always said, like, if we're going to get to that level, they're just going to put us up there because of what we play. And Declaration came out and I remember playing it for like a few friends before it actually came out and they both stopped after like a minute of the song Declaration and they're like, okay, we really thought this was going to be like your fucking like rock sellout record.
Yeah, I guess little did they know that you had already done that with the truth.
Like, you were going to do kind of this, follow the same way. And there's no record that could go opposite. Like, it's a fucking black metal record, essentially. it is, and that's kind of the way we've always kind of been, like, not like on purpose, but we've always kind of been the anti. We've always kind of done our own thing, you know, like, I don't know, like, we've always never thought we were part of the cool table, you know, the cool, like, you know, like the bands like Every Time I Die, Between the Buried Me, and bands that we took on tour, but that was like the cool table. We weren't cool, you know, and it may be because like I wore eyeliner and that. We just never were part of that cool table, you know. That's okay. We always do our own thing. And it's like, it's, you know, now being older and becoming friends with a lot of these younger bands that are playing now and kind of having them like hear, like hearing them tell me how much like our band did for them. That's the validation. I didn't really care about being cool. I wanted to make an impact with like bands that were going to carry that torch. You know, you hear bands like Motionless and White, you know, give props to Bleeding Through. You hear bands like Knocked Loose talk about Bleeding Through, like literally in every interview, you know what I mean? And it's that's validation. That's all we need for, and that's validation for doing it our way, you know, and hopefully these bands can learn from that and do it their way, but also be okay with branching out, looking different, acting different, being different. I hope that we were a part of that. There's girls in bands now, you know, before it was like when Revolver did the Girls of Metal, there was like four girls. Like Marta used to joke, like, instead of calling it the Girls of Late Women of Metal, it's the Woman of Metal. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, now it's like you hear these bands that have female front like person and they're fucking crushing, like bands like Spirit Box and Dying Wish. And like, it's great to see that.
You also benefit from the fact that, you know, what's old is new again. You get to get the people like, oh yeah, I remember always loving them.
Oh, for sure. We've reached that legacy point and I'm okay with that. I think that's awesome because it kind of lives on. And like, but it was kind of funny, like, you know, man, 12 years ago, 15 years ago, 16. And I'm just like, dude, I get it. I'm fucking old. Like, we get it.
Dearly Demented, you have Nick from Tiger Army on.
Yeah. I love Tiger Army. I love Nick.
And that's like your For the Freaks Halloween theme song. You guys are being spooky as hell.
Dude, it totally is. And I totally love it. That was like, honestly, Nick 13's part, I remember when he was singing, I was like getting goosebumps. I'm like, this is the best part of the record right now. It was sick that he did it, man. Like, he's fucking awesome. It's great.
Yeah, I think that's, even at the time, I was like, oh, this is so cool, because it almost doesn't make sense, but it makes perfect sense at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, the spooky era, like, we toured with bands like AFI. We were friends with bands like AFI and different bands that weren't really, like, Bleeding Through. We kind of had, like, this, we all wear black and we all wear makeup, so we're all friends, that type of deal.
That's sick. You guys do the video for Kill to Believe, which is still one of your biggest songs. I mean, probably end sets with it to this day, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think it is, actually. Yeah, I mean, when we play it live, that's the most, I mean, On Wings of Lead, unfortunately, is, but that's the one song on the record I hated. I know I'm shattering all these things. I love it now, but when I first did it, I was like, man, I don't like this song at all. You know what I mean? That's the one song that like kind of got a little bit over, but it is, I look back, it's perfect for the time. I can't even flaw it. It helped this scene move on. It helped it move forward. So I'm all for it. You know what I mean? It's all cool. I love all of our songs. I don't need to be a naysayer. I do love all of our songs, but there's things like recording, like we're talking about The Truth. Like that's the one record I just don't really love.
Well, Kill to Believe, you know, the video also connects to the Love in Slow Motion video. So when you guys made Kill to Believe, did you know then you're like, oh, we're going to do a sequel to this later? Or that came after when you had to do another video?
Yeah, we channeled our inner Ice Nine Kills and we did it way before them. And we decided to do some videos that were connected together as a storyline. Yeah, and it was all kind of horror based. And
lyrically, are there any themes in the songs that way? It seems like some of them kind of connect, but you also have, especially in these earlier albums, kind of common themes with your lyrics anyway. So is there a story kind of throughout it?
It's all love story based, like a path of a love story, heartbreak. You know, agony, joy, love. It's all kind of like based on that. The truth is all based on like former relationships of myself and kind of moving through it mentally. And sort of like that was me singing into a mirror, kind of trying to get through this era of heartbreak and kind of move on. And that was kind of like that stamp for me. So the songs were kind of like that. It was about lost love and and revenge and all of that stuff. And that's like what the theory of the whole record was.
Despite that the album starts with the line, "I don't give a fuck."
I don't give a fuck.
It seems like "This Is Love, This Is Murderous" is mostly the word fuck. Did you consciously try to reduce the profanity when you were going into The Truth to kind of have a more succinct songwriting style, or that happened that way?
Well, here's a tidbit. Trustkill, in all their glory, hits me up and goes, "Hey, we got to make sure these fucking CDs get sold in Walmart and Target. So try to take all of the cuss words out." And I'm just like, "So what's the first word in the, what's the first line of the fucking record?" That was really the beginning of the end of Trustkill. I mean, I'm glad that we were their biggest selling record. I have pride, or selling band, period. I have pride in that. We worked our ass off, but man, when I sent him "This Love, This Is Murderous," the final mixes, I didn't hear from him in a week. I'm like, "Bro, what do you think about this record?" And he goes, "I thought it would sound different." And I go, "Like what?" And he said, "I thought it would sound like a Killswitch Engage record." And I go, "Okay." And then, so he doubted it hard. You know, at that time, it was all about Poison the Well. Tear from the Red was the big, and it's like, we just smashed that thing. I guess I was kind of right. I don't know. I don't know why everybody thought we were going to be Killswitch.
Yeah, I don't know if they did. I mean, I've never heard that from anybody but you.
I got asked to sing for Killswitch when Jesse quit the first time.
Is that true?
That is a true story. I was in Arkansas with Bleeding Through, Norma Jean, and Every Time I Die, the first Bleeding Through headlining tour we ever did in 2002. And maybe 2001, actually, to whenever Jesse quit. And I just kind of knew that, like, Bleeding Through was my shit. I knew I was going to leave 18 Visions and just do Bleeding Through. And I remember the A&R guy hits me up and goes, "Hey, you know, the band wants you to try out to sing for Killswitch." And at the time, Killswitch was an unknown. They weren't really popping off yet. They kind of, Bleeding Through actually was probably bigger than them at that time. So it was one of those things where I'm like, I'm okay. I want to do Bleeding Through. They actually asked James from 18 Visions too. He didn't try it either, but we both recommended Howard, and then there you go.
Why is the album called The Truth?
It's called The Truth because it really is like kind of like, to me, you know what? It's like, we should have called the record End of Heartache, but it wasn't done yet, but you know, but that's kind of what it is. And it's really like the truth about it all. The truth about just being done with that part of me, being done with like the heartache in a different way, that sort of like romanticized, you know, lyrical output that The Truth and This Is Love, This Murder had, whereas Declaration was more about angst of the world and mental instability and battling through experiences. And that's kind of what all the records are since then have been. So The Truth is really about the end of those like sappy, sort of like romanticized lyrics.
You kind of get away from the "I'm bummed out about a girl" songs from after that.
Yours has more been about like what's going on in my fucking head.
What is that album cover supposed to represent?
That part being ripped away from you, all the things that you've said and all the things that you've done, like just a part of you leaves you. And so for me, it was like my mouth, and then everybody else was another part. And it's about that part leaving, but that's like the truth of what it is. Like, this is the truth. Like, I'm speaking the truth right now. Like, this is like something that needs to end for me personally and kind of get to a different place mentally to move forward with this band. It was always about this like story. And I just wanted that story to end, you know what I mean? And it just couldn't go on any further. And so I needed that, the truth to be stamped out there.
The Complete Truth comes out, which it should have been called The Whole Truth. That's way better. And two, you guys had said around that time that you had your own idea for like a re-release of the album. Was that just a different mix, or what was it that you wanted to do to re-release it?
We're going to try to remix, remaster, and then Trustkill kind of like got wind of that. And I don't want to like spoiler alert, but like, we're going to remix and remaster that record myself. You know, I believe that we own them now because that was our settlement from them owing us almost $500,000 in royalties. I mean, they went bankrupt because of us. From what I understand, I mean, I have an attorney on it right now.
What is your favorite thing about The Truth? What is something you like about it?
I like that we came together. I feel like we grew as a band. Like, we became a band on that record. Like, before, like, yeah, we were a band and stuff, but we were still working it out. You know what I mean? Trying to find ourselves, trying to find a group, trying to find all that shit.
I think when we did that record, we found ourselves. We became like a unit. And if one thing that I'll take away from it is that we became a unit, we stayed that unit. And that was shown on Declaration, that was shown on the self-title, that was shown on Great Fire, still shown on Live With Galal, and even these new songs. That's why we are what we are today, is the truth kind of helped us become that band.
Thanks so much to Brandon for inviting me to his friend's poolside cabana party to talk about the 15-year anniversary of The Truth, 16 years after it was released. You can follow Bleeding Through on Instagram at Bleeding Through. They just in 2022 released a new EP entitled Rage that rips. And you can see them this year in 2022 again at the Furnace Fest and at the Tattoo the Earth Festival, which sounds like a joke because that's from the year 2000, but it is true. It is in Massachusetts, where it's always the year 2000, and I'm always Ryan Rainbow. You could have heard this episode early on patreon.com/meatbeatpod ad-free, but now you'll know for next time, and you can keep up with ups and downs and comings and goings on Instagram at meatmeatpod. Leave a comment about the show. Leave a 5-star review on Spotify. Leave a 5-star review at Apple Podcasts. Leave a 5-star review when you leave Walmart at the self-checkout, because you probably stole some spices, maybe some of that black salt. But, you know, you're not paying $12 for something you're going to use a quarter tablespoon for. So leave 5 stars at the customer service. Give back a little for once. My name is Ryan Rainbow. This is Meep Meep. And yes, that's the best that I could come up with. Bye.